A lot of podcasts and online content talk about how to design your intentional life. And it usually comes down to buying a book or a course or buying something. In this episode, I have Jason Thomas from Regeneration Nation, Costa Rica. We talk about how to design your intentional life. We talk about what does your perfect day look like and steps to get there. We have framework steps. We also talk about how to apply permaculture processes to your business or side hustle. I'm taking the permaculture business design course with Jason through Regeneration Nation, Costa Rica. Go and check out the show notes. Jason has a ebook, 77 Ways to Practice Permaculture Professionally. It's free. Check it out. Sign up. Let's get to the episode. Welcome to Thrive in the Future podcast, positive solutions to help you thrive. Homesteading, gardening, community, side hustles, and building skills. Okay, welcome back to Thrive in the Future. This week I have Jason Thomas from Regeneration Nation, Costa Rica. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, Scott. Good to be here.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about Regeneration Nation and yourself, and we'll get into your story a little bit in more depth.
The podcast, Regeneration Nation Costa Rica, and the different side ambitions that tend to meander from it. Regeneration Nation Costa Rica is just my desire to interview more regenerative leaders in Costa Rica and share their stories and promote them and bring some attention to them and inspire other people. Started with landowners. I was for 12 years a permaculture education center, and during the pandemic, well, I was gone for a couple of years prior to that. So when I got back and everything closed down and my farm had atrophied, I just spent time fixing up the farm. And I went around to see what other owners of education centers, retreat centers, homesteads were doing. Well, because I was like, I needed a new start to my farm, you know, and after being gone a couple of years, I had transformed and so forth. And so that started the podcast. It was a way for me to get off the farm during the pandemic and go visit people and have human experiences. So I did a big tour of the country, and, you know, it's cool. I'm talking to all these homesteaders, but they're all kind of in this, very few of them have really excelled to a level of success or outreach or impact beyond mm-hmm. their little bubble.
Right.
Right. And some of them are doing fantastic, but some of them are just kind of, you know, this humble thing. And not to say that the humble homesteads adjust, you know, it's a fantastic, admirable lifestyle to be content with your program set up the way it's at. But a lot of them were also struggling. And so I was like, you know, I want to talk to other, like, I want to talk to some programs that are volunteer programs that aren't like a struggling place, just giving everything away for free. Mm-hmm. And having nothing come in. Like, there's volunteer programs that are attracting students that are paying hundreds of dollars a month and flying themselves to the country so that they can work as part of some volunteer Latin America group or you know, whatever. There's a lot of different volunteer groups that charge you to come out. And then, you know, you get your homestead stay and your food included and stuff, but you're paying for it and you're working mm-hmm. and you're getting an education, and they're doing like big impact. They're going into schools and parks and stuff, and they're like doing installations, and they're like, oh, well, but they're not a land-based project, but they've got mm-hmm. a really great volunteer program. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, and actually it's a bad example because I haven't gotten one of those places on the the show yet, but I've talked to more like consultants. That was another thing I wanted to get into the show. Like, oh, I want to help these people, but if I just talk among these people, then we're going to be limited on insights. But if I talk to the people who are helping these people, mm-hmm. then I can bring more to them. Right.
Right.
So anyhow, that's how that all started. And so I did some events for landowners, like business incubator events and various other initiatives. And I've just come to the place where I'm doing consulting for entrepreneurs and creating this course, this permaculture business design course. And that's just evolved from me actually watching a podcaster and wanting to start my balloon agency and just being like, wow, you know, like, there's so much that I'm learning right now that I really, the grassroots movement needs to know.
Right.
And it was just like, we're blocking so much wisdom.
Right.
And because of taboos and capitalism issues and like money stuff. And it's like, this is this good, smart permaculture. You could see it all as permaculture. That's how I was seeing it. Just like all these business tactics. I was just like, wow, that's catching and storing energy. Wow, that's stacking functions. Wow, that's, you know.
Let's jump into that in a minute. You said the balloon part, which I think is neat and I want to get into, but how did you end up in Costa Rica?
You know, I lived my 20s backpacking around North America, just hitchhiking around, tying balloon animals, just kind of living a vagabond life for 6 years. Really? It was pretty expensive. And then I got to the point where I felt ambitious and I was living in Hawaii and I wanted to like do projects with people and they'd all be like, oh, that's a cool idea, but let's just go to the beach. You know, it was the culture I was with and the culture of the islands really. And I had some friend that called me out to Minnesota because there was this huge tribe of activated festival type people, musicians, artists, and there's just a thriving scene of folks in those in those circles, the a lot of body workers and people in nutrition and wellness.
Sure.
So I went out there and I met a bunch of amazing people that were activated, and that's what I wanted after 6 years of vagabonding, was to like co-create with people. So I got into doing all of that and being part of big festivals and getting my balloon business going, to making bigger art and learning to work with clients. And
so you had the balloon business where you're making balloons on the street. And then how did you translate that into a balloon business for clients?
The first moment was when I was in Kalakaua Strip in Waikiki. And I'd been there for a month or so. And there was just certain people that loved what I do. I drew a huge crowd of people that would just stand there and watch me make balloon art for a long time. And there was this one woman who made some business cards. And this was like 2002 or something. You know, this is the dawn of more of a digital savvy age. And she brought me a stack of business cards. And I was just like, with a picture of me with my big balloon hats. And like, I was like, I lit up. I was like, oh my God. Like, this is, I never thought to create business cards for myself at the point. And I was never, I was rarely somewhere long enough that they'd even matter. I didn't even have a phone number. And so that got me to start doing some private gigs where I landed in different places. And like, I'd go to, you know, schools and churches and stuff when they'd have like their parish festival. And and then when I moved to Minneapolis, all of a sudden there was this whole tribe of people, like I'm saying, and they were just all like, you do what? Like, totally got someone to tell about you. And so people were really promoting me and it was great. And I hooked up with an agent who took me to some of his expos and stuff with him. And so, yeah, I started doing that and I started holding some balloon jams. Were some just balloon artists I met in the neighborhood. I was just like I'm kind of lonely doing this. I don't know, like really know. I've been on the road. I've never really interacted with too many people, but I've had a couple experiences and I love co-creating. And so I contacted some people. I was like, hey, you want to come by and we'll jam, like let's trade some designs. And and then somebody came over who had some skills and he taught us some weaving, like balloon weaving, to make these big fabrics with patterns. And my buddy and I, for this big people's festival, the May Day festival, huge festival, we decided we wanted to be in the festival and we made full body costumes and marched to the festival. And it was such an experience to like really make, spend 12 hours making something enormous that I got into it. And so then I started using that picture as a portfolio piece to start telling people, hey, I can do anything. And then that developed more from there. So that was my first, it was still kind of haphazard winging it, but that was when I first started working more with clients.
Wow. And then COVID killed all of that, right?
Oh, well, that was before I even moved. That was, yeah, that was before I moved to Costa Rica. You asked how I got to Costa Rica. So I was telling that story. I got to Minneapolis for 3 years and being in a cold, flat city, even with a tribe of cool people, I was just ready to go. And my girlfriend at the time didn't want to raise her kids in the States. And so we bought a school bus and converted it into a veggie oil RV and threw the kids and whatever else we could fit in it and hit the road with a blizzard on our tail and drove south until we got to Costa Rica. And we were like, this is cool. Let's check this out. And after a few months of visiting different areas of the country, we bought a farm and got to it. And then it wasn't until 7 years later when I went back to the States to get some services for my son that I spent 2 years there. And that's when I started really studying business. And like, I've been a lifelong entrepreneur, but I've always been just kind of winging it and starting things on impulse and hoping for the best. And yeah, that's when I turned it into much more.
Yeah. So I know you because I've taken the permaculture business design course through Regeneration Nation, and I'm really getting a lot out of it. One of the things that I really like is everybody talks about design your intentional life, right? And, you know, podcasts are talking about that, but everybody thinks it's go out and do this, buy this, whatever. And it's a mindset, and then it's actually like working the plan, coming up with a plan and then working the plan. And some of those exercises really stood out to me, especially about what does your perfect day look like? What does this life look like that you are going towards? Is it just one continuous weekend day? You know, like my weekend today, I planted trees and everything else. Is it just a continuation of that? Or what is it? How do you define that and then help clients think along those lines?
It's a great exercise because a lot of people don't give themselves permission to ask that question.
Excellent.
They were born on the hamster wheel.
Mm-hmm.
They were born with the matrix plugged into them. And it's obviously a lot of people design their life and bring beautiful, wonderful things into it. And a lot of people don't. And for the people that feel stuck and they're just grinding through the thing that they've been doing for a while because they're just paying the bills and they don't really know how to get off, it's hard sometimes to tap into what are your passions, because I just work all the time and then I try to watch some TV and hang out with the kids and sometimes we go out to eat, you know. And it takes journaling. I can share the things that I do, that I've cultivated in my life that make me feel whole and balanced, but really that's got to work for everybody. However, there are certain categories to guide people's self-inquiry. For me, at the base is wellness. If you look at the world of what are people paying for solutions for, what are people need help with? It's either going to be wealth, health, relationships, or spirituality.
Mm.
Like pretty much most all businesses and services on the market are somehow helping people get their financial game together, helping them with relationships, helping them with their personal well-being or their spirituality. And that's a good framework, now that I think about it, for asking those questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you want your financial foundation to look like in your ideal world? And don't just say $1 million. You know, really think about it. Do some calculations. Right. What do you need to make it? What are you going to need to make it if you got injured and a whole year went by and you had to make up with your savings or some passive income? What's the bare minimum you got to keep coming in?
Sure.
What would you like to add to your life? What would that cost? And like really do a thing and be like, what is it? Do I need $100,000? And I was always into calculus when I was in high school, because I always liked the idea that you could, if the more skilled I became, you could give me a destination, a problem, something that you want to figure out. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to get there. I don't know the answer. I don't even know all the pieces, but I can start to see a path of things that are relative to either here or there. Mm-hmm. And if I can lay out those pieces and just work one step at a time, I can all of a sudden discover something that I didn't know how to know. because I just took the next step. So asking like financially, well-being for me is top of the list. I've really taken it very seriously. I mean, really all my life since I was a young sick man in my teens and early 20s and, you know, learning about the lies of the food industry and the medical industry and the toxicity that they're perpetuating in the human population and like how that made me sick. And that's what was essentially killing the people that I loved. Like I got real rebellious at like 21 and was just like, got rid of all the food from the pots and pans and went raw foods and did cleansing and fasting. And like really have ever since then had whole foods be one of my values. Right. My movement, my exercise, that's come and gone over the years. Cause you can get away with not doing exercise, but you can't get away with not eating.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, just having a belief system and a filter that when I go into a grocery store or any store, there's just like, there's a difference between food items and not food items. And most like 95% of the stuff in most grocery stores for me is categorized as non-food items.
Right.
I just wouldn't even consider buying anything in that box or bag or can because it just has things in it that don't give me vitality. That's not to say that I don't go order a pizza once a month or have a beer every now and again. Like I'm no extremist, but I do have a really clear foundation for I'm going to pay my money for something. It's going to go to people that are doing things that I want to see done in the world. And if I'm going to bring something into my home, you know, this is my sanctuary. This is an extension of myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, I just think twice, like, do I want to bring that thing with hydrogenated oils into my temple? Do I want to bring that? So wellness is foundational. The last year and a half of taking movement very seriously, getting on my yoga mat, doing some calisthenics at least 3-4 days a week, you know, whether it's 15 minutes or 2 hours, you know, just keeping the body prime, you know, I'm approaching 50 and that's just getting, you know, you atrophy quicker, you got to use it or lose it. And
it gets worse after 50.
Yeah, I know. And, but by developing a practice now, it gets less worse.
Sure. Agreed.
And I just don't want to be a broken person that my kids have to take care of is one of my motivating factors. So I keep prime.
So what does your perfect day look like?
It's hitting a lot of these points. I hit most of these four points every day. I wake up, I do my little round of home care, you know, fill the water filter and, you know, put the dishes away and, you know, sweep the floor and just clear the space. And then I usually throw down my yoga mat. Even if I'm going to just take 5 or 10 minutes to stretch and twist my spine, I find that getting those first little micro adjustments in the day to my spine and hips makes a huge difference to how I carry myself through the day. And then usually if I get those 5 to 10 minutes in and I get a little routine, like eventually, you know, I'm more likely to get in the next 15 minutes. And then once my heart rate's going, I'm like, yeah, let's get this. And then, you know, so it depends on the day, but I do something to honor and prepare my body for the day.
Mm-hmm.
I also most days spend 30 minutes or so in a meditation practice. I use an app called Waking Up. Sam Harris is a author, podcaster, neurologist, meditation teacher, and he's got a great app called Waking Up that I really like his non-secular techniques that he shares for mindfulness practice. And there's a lot of really great Dharma talks on it. And that's another thing that I do in my morning. I just start with mindfulness, whether it's in the way paying attention to the way I move my body on the yoga mat, or a formal sitting practice, or while I'm making my tea, you know, the cues by listening to a guided meditation 30 minutes a day of someone cueing you to pay attention to your state of consciousness and the contents of your consciousness, and reminding you to like have touch points through the day where you remember this, and like just in your transition moments, like remember to pay attention and like really stop thinking and just be completely aware of everything you can see, hear, feel. The wind passing over the hairs on my arms is one of my favorite cues for that.
Really?
Wow. And just stop everything. I'm like, oh, I'm present. This is good enough. So that's a big part of my day. So health, spirituality, wealth. I mean, you know, I get on the computer most days for 2 to 12 hours, you know, to content creation is quite a thing. This course has been so much more than I thought I signed up for. Like, it's just been tremendous, the amount of content I'm creating for this. And so, yeah, I keep to the wealth piece and formed my business around it because I think it's so important. And one of the things that most of the people that in my circle, in my field, in this grassroots culture are denying themselves that pillar of those four pillars. Mm-hmm. And they're promoting it as one of their values, but they're suffering for it and not doing what they would do, which would be good stuff if they weren't struggling. So find that pillar to be something to continue to cultivate. And then relationships, man, community care. I don't care how busy I am. I don't care how late the lessons or the modules are. I had to get out of my house once or twice a week to go connect with people, to have a drum jam. Mostly around here where I live, the community has a lot of singing circles. Really? We just get together and share songs. And I usually bring my drum and just hold down the percussion. But just soft gathering. You know, singing together is one of those things that when researchers do studies on communities and cultures that have a close bond, singing together, no matter what the format is, like singing together is one of the top of the list qualities or practices of successful communities of people that feel like that report that they're happy and connected. So I've made an extra intention in the last year to use my voice more and express myself that way. I've been shy about that much of my life, but doing that with friends and like building friendships based around that has been so rich. And, and you know, if I see somebody doing a little workshop or something and it's interesting enough, you know, I'll throw the $20 and go to their workshop and just like see, you know, what they got, or a static dance, or, you know, some kind of, I just got to get out of the house and meet humans, like hug people. Cause that is something I think we all learned the value of when we couldn't do it. Right. And it's a lesson to not forget. Just cause we don't have to stay isolated doesn't mean we should allow ourselves to be.
Sure. Yeah. Next week we're having a local meetup with some of the people I met from the farmer's market, some of the homesteaders that I know, some of the other folks, and then preppers that I know. And it's like, this seems like a real disparate group, but you know, you have your inner circle and then you have your circle of influence and your circle of control or concern, whatever. And you know, that circle is pretty big initially. And we're going to get together at a local coffee shop and talk about stuff. In the spring, we have a seed swap, and you've never seen grown men get excited as they do at a seed swap. You pull out some weird looking squash variety and they go, oh, you have that. And then they get all excited. It's so funny. Yep. I love it every year to see that. It's just great. So talking about the class, I've been getting a lot out of it to apply some of these things to myself. I work remote. I've worked remote even for before COVID. It really, I use that commute time to work in the garden. I use that commute time to walk up and down the driveway. One of my favorite things is at the end of the day, walk down the driveway. And I notice that I don't notice anything when I'm walking down the driveway to the mailbox. I have a quarter mile driveway. I turn around and I come back, and all of a sudden the vista is there and I see it. And then it's like sweeping it all clean. I take a deep breath, and then I'm noticing the day by day changes. Oh, wow. What's this? I've never seen this plant before. I might have to pull out plant this and look at it. Right. And, the mulberry is out, or the milkweed is going to seed and stuff like that. And I can see all that all the way back. That's real important to me that I would have spent in a car, you know, in a commute. And I've been drawing the line as the employer wants me to, you know, go back in. And then looking at my business opportunities, right? So whether it's my tree business or in expanding that into, you know, permaculture and food forest guild design, is from a financial standpoint, I'm looking not necessarily to immediately replace all my income, which would be hard, but what can you do? It's like, it isn't $1,000 that you have to worry about selling. You got to worry about selling your first $10. And then building on that, right? And that's important to make that incremental thing. Everybody goes, oh, I tried it, it didn't work. Well, yeah, that's because you set your goals at, like, you know, you wanted to replace 50% of your income or something. And I'm looking at what can I do this year, and then what can I do to expand next year? And then what value do I get? Like, I spent this morning out repotting trees. And I really, really enjoy that. You know, that's a weekend thing, of course, because today is Saturday. We're recording this on a Saturday, but I do that at lunch. I do that after work. And that's my, like you said, my jam, right? So, you know, those things are important to me. And then building a business around that to get more of those, and perhaps downshifting into a less stressful job that makes up the difference in pay by this jam business, right? So it was funny. I was telling you this in the prep that Perpin, the guy I started the podcast with, we had an episode back in episode 10, 3 years ago. And it was, what's your perfect day look like? And his was, I want to read, I want to garden, and I want to pray. And mine was, I want to not get yelled at today at work. So, you know, get more away from those kind of roles and, you know, that toxicity. And then, downshift a little bit and then make up the difference with the core jam business, right? The things that I really care about. So that's the way I look at it.
Well, that brings up something that I picked up early on. Like I said, after 7 years here, we left and went back to the States for a couple of years. And when I got there, I was just like stunned by going from being a teacher at a permaculture education center and being able to teach so many life skills to these people that were coming through from, mm-hmm. you know, some of these people never made food for themselves. You know, like, some of these people never really like did a lot of things for themselves. And we were just like really cultivating people's awakenings in so many ways. And I was multifunctional, multi-useful. And I got to the city and I was just felt useless. All of a sudden, like, I know it wasn't a truth, but just the way I felt in the environment, I was like, I'm not willing to do most of the things that this society offers for me to do. That's really what it came down to, is I just have a, I'd lived enough of my life in an expansive way that like, for one, I don't make a great employee.
I don't either.
I've tried, but I just got, too many ideas. And so I struggled to find my way, and I needed to learn something. I was like, I need to learn how to make money. I had no job history. I had no credit history. I had no living history. Like, getting an apartment was a non-option for me. I was reliant on renting rooms off Craigslist because I had no credentials for an official option. And so anyhow, I started listening to podcasts for the first time in my life. And I was listening to the Balloon Artist podcast.
And there's a Balloon Artist podcast, huh?
There's a Balloon Artist podcast. My first business coach, Zivi Kivi, he had a Balloon Artist podcast, and he had the Balloon Artist Academy, where he's got online courses. I took many of them. He does a bit of a mastermind type program. So I took his, I went down that rabbit hole, started going to conventions. That's where I met him finally, and et cetera. So I listened to the Tim Ferriss podcast, and this is why I'm sharing all this. Mm-hmm. And I also listened to his book, The 4-Hour Work Week. And this is to your point. He talked about the creation of a muse business. Mm. He's like, look, a lot of people they have a passion project. They got something they really want to do in the world, but doing it for money, having to rely on it to meet their financial needs, keeps a lot of people struggling and not doing anything. Mm-hmm. So he recommends in the 4-Hour Work Week, like, just figure out, make a calculated move for how to do something that you believe in that meets your ethics and values that just going to make money. It's a simple make money business. And then you can be set up to do whatever you need to do, where you have money to invest, you have time to invest, because you create something that it might not be your passion project. And that's one thing we get stuck in our cultures, where people say, just do what you love and the rest will work itself out. Hmm. Right? We hear that. And it's not entirely true.
Right.
sometimes you gotta do something that's going to meet your financial needs that you can love, so that you can do what you love to do.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that was one of those lessons that stuck with me. Yeah. So when you're building your business, like you're saying, like building up, staging the growth, like, okay, I want to have a permaculture design and implementation business. Cool. You have no experience. Not a problem. Just a solution waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. So you know where you're going, like calculus. I don't know how to be there yet, but what are some components that's going to entail that maybe I could start with, that's just guaranteed to make me some money, even if it's not part, like, integrated into the whole plan yet.
Right.
But at least I got this going. So like in your case, for instance, like, okay, for now I'm realizing, like, part of having this business is having a good plant stock. I've already been passionate about growing plants, your chestnut trees and so forth. So how about if I don't spread myself super thin, but I get really good at the propagation of my plants first, and like really set that up so that when I am doing designs, like, I'm not trying to do two different business infrastructures at the same time. Mm-hmm. Just create one of the pieces of the infrastructure, one that's could be a commodity thing. Right? That you just have plants that people are buying and that you got money, and then you can start branching out. And that's a way to stage, like, part of my big dream, that if I did it in a bit more of a bubble, a bit more isolated of an ambition to just get it started, which piece of my big plan could just generate revenue right away. And it could just be selling, growing plants to sell to other landscapers that are doing the thing that you eventually want to do.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit about the permaculture business design course. Some of the feedback I've got when I've said, hey, I'm taking this permaculture business design course, people go, well, yeah, I don't want to be a permaculture designer. And then I said, well, no, it's more than that. It's about applying these principles to your business and then also growing your business. Everything that I've got in here doesn't necessarily drive you to be a permaculture designer, right?
Yeah. So it is part of my feedback loop. As you start a business, you're going to navigate your niche. It's going to fluctuate. You got to play with different things and see, instead of trying to round up all the chickens, go where the chickens are. Right. When it comes down, my deeper why, right? When we do the exercise, like, what do you really want out of this? Like, I know what it's like to struggle with insufficient business savvy, knowledge, education. And I know so many people that are struggling with lack of business education that really, I wish they weren't. I wish they were doing good. And it just got me to the point where I'm like, I want to help these people. I want to be a bridge between the business and the grassroots movement. So what do you do with that? Really started off with landowners. Those were my first clients. And then their businesses were really big. And the people I was attracting, the more we did these foundational exercises to start discovering what they want to be doing. In my first iteration, my coaches were doing just getting them started on getting implemented. And then I realized, like, oh, we should have asked more questions. We're 2 months into this and you're realizing you don't have enough resources to actually pull this off, or you don't really want to jump through those hoops legally. And you're going to have to, like, if you want to have a skate park in your backyard, there's insurance you got to buy, you know, like, so that's when I stepped back. And then I was just like, you know, this design, this format, this permaculture format, it's just applicable to any small business owner, anybody who is trying to, like, really take all their ideas for what they want to do and bring it into a path. So that's what I've been working with for the last year and a half. Maybe about a year since I had my first client under this framework. And of the people I was helping, it was permaculture students that were, like, really getting it, that were, like, and it was like, because I designed my coaching methodology on the permaculture methodology, it's got the slang, the lingo. And it was just like, all right, well, if I'm going to build a course on this, I'm going to aim it to permaculturists. So that's what I've done. And I do intend to redo the course in a different light, aimed more broadly. But to, like, really understand what it is, I had to get it all out. And that's what the permaculture business design course is. But yes, the framework is multi-applicable. And one of the challenges that I'm part of my mission has to be championing is broadening people's perspective of what permaculture is and how permaculture can be. That's like the lead magnet that I created that actually I'm just about to share in the coming week, 77 ways to practice permaculture professionally. I think, you know, I've been watching old videos from Bill Mollison and David Holmgren and like really kind of getting a little bit more into the roots of it and some of these old, and the elitist specific ideal of the narrow way that permaculture is supposed to be applied is new. It's like those guys were trying to open it up to multi-applicability, and especially Bill Mollison. And there's a whole faction of people in the permaculture field that are like, I know what permaculture is. And if it isn't this, it's not real permaculture. It's like good organics, or it's just something else. And it's just like, I don't believe that. And so that's something that I get to educate people with the public content that I now have to create in order to get more people in the course, is break down those firm understandings. I don't want to call them misunderstandings, but they're narrow understandings of what permaculture is, and bring people to understand that, like, no, this is a design science. It's like, what makes something permaculture is that no matter what it is, whether you're putting plants in the ground or developing social activities for your community, or designing community resources, or designing your life or your business, it's the antithesis about impulsive, utilitarian, conventional, linear design. So most things in our society are designed in a very utilitarian, direct, linear, there's my goal, here's the path to getting it, I'm going to just start and get to my goal. And permaculture is like, whoa, there's a whole context here that not only should we consider, because it's all influencing us, but whatever we do is going to influence other things. So let's really look at the context of whatever we're doing and think about it in its interrelations, in its edges, in its stacked functions, in its multi-yield potentials. Let's apply things like the 8 forms of capital and other filters and frameworks for seeing things, and take the time to see, what do we want to get out of this functions? What do we need to make that happen? Systems. And what do we need to acquire or build in order to get that happening? Your elements. And so that way of approaching solutioning anything in your life or society, I think we should be thinking that more and more. And that's one of the reasons that I'm also being bold enough to be in this confusing place of applying different permaculture differently than it's commonly being applied, and using its term different than it's normally being applied, as kind of, I'm one of the many pioneers that are doing this, that are trying to open this perspective of what permaculture is. And there's a bell curve on that, you know, it's like, it takes some energy to really get people thinking that. So I'm kind of at a tough spot there. Confusion does come in. People misunderstand it. They have their narrow focus, so they feel like it's not for them. And that's, I think, where I'm realizing that my public campaign has to come in, not so much teaching the things in the course, but helping to break down those barriers of narrow understanding to expand people, like, oh, okay, maybe I will look at it, because maybe it is for me. Maybe it is applicable to me. And when they get there, they'll find out that it's very permaculture jargon rich, the course, you know, so you gotta be, you know, I did brand it as that, and some, and design it as that. So I'm using that. And I think in the next iteration, I'll translate a lot of that terminology to what that ideal client is more accustomed to and familiar with. But the course is, it's using the permaculture business design method to teach people that are interested in permaculture how to create a business using what they've learned in permaculture. So it's both. Yeah. Yeah. Regenerative comes from the root regenerate, which is a term that people use in their common language. So it's an easy an uneducated person knows what regenerate means. And it is a quality of something rather than like a whole design system or a methodology of perception and design. So yes, regeneration is an easier word to throw into your branding because it's people don't have to think about it. They get it. Permaculture, people got to think about it. If they're not, you know, most, and I stayed away from using the word permaculture for a long time because I also was impacted by that like elitist attitude. And I was like, I don't want to be associated with something that people are like shaming other people for not being good enough with. Like that's, I don't want to associate with that. You know, organic's good for me. Like people know what organic is. It doesn't have chemicals. Like, okay, that's. And then my appreciation for permaculture really deepened after on our third year of the farm, when we closed the doors to redesign our business model. And my ex-wife, who was the permaculture teacher of the family, applied the method and principles to our family life and our home life and our business life and the way we hosted volunteers and structured our events and so forth. And that is when I started using the word permaculture more frequently in conversation, because that's when I was like, oh, okay. Because we even had a long-term, we had a prospective member that was with us for our first couple of years. And eventually she left, and that was a hard time. But she was also someone who was very strict about what permaculture was and wasn't, and that wasn't appealing to me. And so again, that was one of the reasons I was like, okay, you guys do permaculture. I'm going to just make this thing operate. I'm going to pay the bills, get the resources, handle the workers. Like, you guys do permaculture, whatever. My idea wasn't good enough. Fine. It's got to be like it is in the book. Like, go ahead and practice what's in the book and then redo it later when you realize that the conditions are different. I'm going to not have that be my identity. And then, yeah, when we applied it broader than that, and I really had a reason to go through the process and understand its deeper implications, that's when I both developed an appreciation for it and got that first idea in my mind, like, oh, man, more projects got to do this for themselves. Everybody got to shut the doors and ask themselves these kind of questions, because we just discovered a lot, and we had to be real honest about our ideals and what isn't working for us. And you know, that was like 12 years ago. I'm finally sharing the methodology with people. And so it's taken a while to get from that moment of appreciating it and welcoming it into my life as a brilliant concept to sharing it with people as such and helping them see it that way too. But
so tell a little bit more on how people can connect with you, both with your podcast and also, and then I'll include a link in the show notes for the course.
Great. Well, Regeneration Nation Costa Rica, you can search for it in any podcast or YouTube or Spotify or whatever. RegenerationNationCR.com is the website, and all my social media accounts are pretty much at RegenerationNationCR. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and sign up for my newsletter. I talk about cultural integration as one of the topics that I'm passionate about, and really connecting with your neighbors, and again, this community care piece and being good ambassadors of our culture to the moguls of the world, the more, you know, people that are still more in a conventional lifestyle, like ways to connect with them and build bridges. And so my newsletter shares tons of resources on both community care stuff and some windows into what I talk about in the entrepreneurial realms. Yeah. So those are the best ways to get in touch with me. If you really want to send me an email or a message on any of the socials. I love responding and interacting with folks.
Sounds good. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah. Oh, one other plug for the PCX, the Permaculture Crossing, where the course is hosted there. I've been consulting for 8 months or so, I think, with the admins of that social media site. And so it's a social media hub for permaculturists, enthusiasts. You don't need a PDC to be there. And there's a lot of really great people there, and we're getting ready for a member drive. If you teach a online course, or if you have a PDC and you want to have a place to host your cohort experience online, the Permaculture Crossing is using Mighty Network. And we've got these spaces that you can have. Like, I've got a private space that's free for Right Livelihood, just anybody wanting to share information about making business and so forth. But there's many regenerative discussion groups, bioregional hubs, online courses, and room for more course creators or cohort leaders to use that space and really make that a place off of Facebook where we can really get into it together and start collaborating. And so the PCX, Right Livelihood space, or any of the other spaces there, is something I would direct your folks to interact with.
Yep. Yeah. I like the PCX. I interact a lot with the topics over there and with the discussions. So I really like it. Highly recommend the thumbs up.
Right on.
Good. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you for listening to Thrive in the Future podcast. If you like what you hear, please click that like or subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter at Thrive in the Fute, and also go to thriveinthefuture.com. If you like this content, then shoot us a tip on Venmo or Cash App at Thrive in the Future, or go check out the stuff on our stuff page on thriveinthefuture.com/stuff. You'll help support the podcast and maybe a little less hysteria in your life. Take care, everybody.